Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us today on the Commons, we have yet another one of those unique, wonderful angels out there who actually represent the homeowners in homeowner association cases. With us today on the line is Barbara Billiott-Stage from Florida. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Barbara, when we talked, you talked a little while ago, you said that we're going to cover a number of topics. We're going to talk about legislation and legal fees and all kinds of other issues. But one thing you told me that I thought was really interesting was that you seem to get all the bizarre cases. I thought that everything in an association was bizarre.
Well, they are pretty bizarre, just different levels of bizarre. And I seem to have the cases where people are trying to actually physically hurt each other. So those rise to a whole new level. To me, when it resorts to violence and police intervention and people making false police reports.
Who are the people, the board members or the owners?
The board members, they use this as a means of intimidation and retaliation against a homeowner if they complain.
What, you know, I hear a whole lot about that, Barbara. Homeowners have tried to call the police, and the police will take a, you know, step back, and they'll say, sorry, folks, this is private, and you agreed to it, and we cannot get in, we cannot get involved. But yet when the board members call, all of a sudden, you know, they're all over the place.
Yeah, that's true. Whenever a homeowner tries to call, especially in Florida, that they will say it's a civil matter, hire you yourself an attorney and take it to court. But the board members, when they call, because they seem to, I don't want to call them liars and say they lie, but pretty much that's what they do. They'll lie and say they're being physically threatened, that they fear for their lives, that they're in danger, and they will make claims of battery, assault, trespass, ridiculous claims. And I've had associations that have actually had trespass warrants issued against homeowners to keep them out of board meetings. That seems to be the latest new trend.
And that's been going on for a while.
Yeah, it's heating up here in Florida as more people are standing up for their rights and saying, I'm not going to take this anymore.
Years ago, they used to have what I dubbed the Mad Hatter's Tea Party because board meetings would be held, you know, in different locations all the time. So homeowners had to try and figure out where they were going to meet. Today, they would just bounce around. They might start the meeting in one place and then adjourn and resume the meeting someplace else. So it was kind of like a Mad Hatter's Tea Party, just to get the homeowners away from them. Another case in Virginia, the homeowner was actually arrested for going to a board meeting.
Yeah, that's been known to happen here, too. And while none of my clients have been arrested yet, that's not to say there won't be some soon, and there's been lots of attempts. I even have one association that, because we've uncovered a lot of fraud and embezzlement, I should say alleged fraud and alleged embezzlement, nothing's been proven yet, but we have requested assistance from the IRS to investigate and from the local police department to investigate. So now these board members have hired bodyguards that carry guns, and they threaten my client at board meetings physically remove her. And this is one of the more bizarre cases I have. This board has actually, when they took over, they fired all of the vendors and hired themselves. They hired themselves to be security guards, to be property managers, to do maintenance, and they pay themselves nice fat paycheck. They write themselves cash advances, interest-free, that they never repay. If you look at the check stubs, it looks like they're repaying the cash advances, but when you do the math, the money's never taken out of their checks. They have actually written checks to post bail. They waive assessments for people they need favors from. And anybody who might be a witness in this case, they put on their payroll and hire them as a maintenance person or a pool monitor.
A pool monitor?
Yes. Now they're paying lots of people who live in the community, you know, $10 an hour to monitor the pool.
What?
To make sure no unauthorized use goes on.
Oh, I thought that was to make sure the pool doesn't get up and walk away.
Yeah, no, and never mind, you have to walk through the clubhouse and office to get to the pool.
But they still need
a pool monitor to make sure someone who's not authorized to use the pool is in the pool. And you have to have an ID card with a copy of your driver's license to even get to the pool.
Wow.
But they still need a pool monitor.
They need a pool monitor, huh?
Yeah.
What happened, you know, in Florida you had Julio Ravina started this pilot program where he got law enforcement involved in going in and actually investigating allegations of fraud and wrongdoing. Is that still, do you know if that's working? I mean, we actually need assistance from real law enforcement sometimes.
Desperately need law enforcement assistance, but we don't get it. As the last I talked to Julio, the program was taking off in his district, Miami-Dade County, but
right.
it hasn't, as far as I'm aware, gone anywhere in any other county. And again, every time, and I practice statewide. I go all over the state from the panhandle down almost to the key. And every county that I've practiced in, we can't get the assistance of law enforcement. They just really think it's a civil matter. I finally have one case that in Orange County where I reside at that the investigative unit told me if I give them certain things, they will investigate.
And are they doing it, or?
Well, they told me I have 30 days to get them the materials, and then it'll take approximately 4 months for them to actually get around to starting the investigation because they have so many cases that they're faced with.
You do know that the FBI is involved in investigating all kinds of wrongdoings in Nevada. Did you know that?
Yes, I knew that, and I wish the Florida offices would do the same. I mean, I even sent off information to the Internal Revenue Service about 8 weeks ago and haven't heard a word.
Yeah, they tend to be really slow. We tried the post office saying, hey, they're using you guys to deliver all these things, and the post office said, yeah, we see that, but you know what? We're not going to do anything about it. So what needs to happen here, Barbara? I mean, we've got so much legislation, and the more laws they write, the worse things get.
Well, we have so much legislation, but we have no way of enforcing it other than to go through the court system. And every petition I've ever filed, you know, the association attorneys tell me, oh, we're going to bury you in pleadings. We're going to run up the bill to where your clients can't afford to continue on to court. And they will typically spend $110,000 to $150,000.
Wait, they've told you this?
Oh yeah, they as soon as they're served with my petition, they will call me up and tell me this. And my words to them are, I'm not impressed, I'm not intimidated, I don't care, go for it.
Well, you know what, I've heard from attorneys before saying that, you know, we'll just bury you and we'll keep you so wrapped up in paperwork that you will not be able to handle anything for your other clients, the paying clients. So we're just going to keep you all wrapped up in this. Barbara, that sounds like downright
discovery abuse. Yes.
Thank you. I mean, abuse is that's threatening. That's a bully tactic.
Yeah, but then you have the courts and the local bar associations, and even the state bar will say, well, you know, it's a fine line between aggressively and vigorously, representing your client and abusing the process.
But this is clearly abuse.
Well, you would think so, but
the bar doesn't think so.
No, they look at it as they're doing their job, defending their client to the best of their abilities. And then, you have a problem with proving it. I mean, there's no quantitative number of motions someone can file before it's considered abusive.
What, here we go with outrageous fees. I have a friend who's paying, she's well over $500,000 in legal fees. Not everyone can afford that.
No. I met a gentleman when we were doing the town hall meetings with Julio Rabana, and he had spent over $500,000 fighting his homeowners association, and he wasn't anywhere near the end of the litigation.
So how can we stop it?
There needs to be some kind of governmental agency to regulate these associations. There needs to be checks and balances. There needs to be, first off, some kind of system that someone reviews the governing documents to ensure that certain things are in them, that they're recorded properly, and that it's a mandatory association. There's quite a number of associations that are not mandatory associations because there's either defects in their documents or they were recorded after the homeowners bought their properties, or the developer didn't set up the association, just kind of abandoned the scheme and then later decided to revive it. And then what is your recourse? If you don't pay their assessments, they're going to lien and foreclose on your property. So you're going to spend tons of money defending a foreclosure, which ruins your credit, ruins your life, and to prove that this association had no right to impose this assessment anyway. Or you can fight them prior to them leaning and foreclosing your property, but then again, you need to have about $100,000 to do it.
You know, the problem with all of these government oversight, I mean, we've been talking about we need adult supervision. I've been saying that for years and years and years. And when the industry proposed adult supervision in Virginia, I actually went down to Richmond a number of times and testified against having them because the government oversight is being run and managed and set up by the very industry that needs to be supervised.
Yeah, it's like asking your kids to watch the cookie jar to make sure their brothers and sisters don't steal cookies.
It's like handing a thief the key to your house and saying, stand here and don't let someone walk in and steal my stuff.
Right.
I mean, this is a robber. This is someone who, that's what he does. And that's in essence what's happening across the country. It started off in Nevada with the first ombudsman. When she was doing a relatively decent job, they kicked her out. They replaced her. So now you've got a whole panel of who's who in CAI sitting there. And the homeowners are going to go and say, hey, your law firm represents my association, and here's what they're doing to me. Protect me? It's not going to work.
Right. Well, I say the system will never work because you have a private corporation that will trample all over your constitutional rights, and it's run by your neighbors who want to get involved in every aspect of it on a personal level. Never going to work. I see where other states, they use code enforcement to enforce deed restrictions. They don't have the problems we have because you've got a uniformed governmental officer is going to come out and tell you you have a violation, you have so many days to correct it, or you're going to pay a fine. It's not going to be some neighbor coming by with a ruler measuring the height of your grass and then issuing you a $100 fine every day. And, you know, and the grass situation is a typical example. They know that most homeowners mow their grass on a weekend, so they will come by on a Friday night and check everyone's grass to see if it's too high. There was a gentleman on the Gulf Coast of Florida that was actually arrested over his lawn.
You're kidding.
No.
For what?
Well, the HOA took him to court, and the judge ordered him to cut his grass. And the gentleman was disabled, living on a fixed income. He couldn't cut the grass himself, and he didn't have the money to hire someone. People would come by occasionally and cut it for him, you know, just as a gesture of goodwill, but I guess that didn't happen often enough, and the HOA took him to court. So the judge ordered him to do this, and he didn't have the money or the means to comply, so he was thrown in jail for contempt of court.
Now, was that one of yours?
No, it wasn't one of mine.
That's a bizarre case.
Yeah, that is bizarre. And I have some that rise to that level. I mean, throwing someone in jail that is so restrictive of their liberties, that's outrageous. But I have other associations that have resorted to this stalking behavior that has left my clients prisoners in their own home.
Yeah, I've heard about that. And where they get in the car and they drive around and they scare them and they try to run them off the road and they follow them, and especially if it's a woman on her own.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I've got some that are even much worse than that. I've got a client right now who her board actually put live water moccasins in her mail slot into her condo.
What?
Yes, and she's had her one cat killed, one cat maimed with fireworks. Her condo was broken into, and then the board's bragging about certain information about her that they had no way of knowing unless they were party to this break-in.
You know, I've heard about condos breaking in and just literally driving, playing mind games. You know, they'll go in and they'll move the lamp over, or they'll just move things around. And the homeowner knows that they left the blanket on the chair, and then all of a sudden it's over on the couch.
Yeah.
You know, and you do this often enough. It's like day after day after day. Every time you come in from work, and somebody's moved something in your condo.
Right, and you start to question your own sanity. That's part of it. Yeah.
Right. It's just unbelievable. It's horrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had clients that were actually, I had a client that was physically poisoned already.
How?
Ended up in the hospital. They stored pesticides in the unit next door to her condo, and the fumes overtook her.
They did this on purpose?
Yes, sure.
Nice people.
Because they did it not just once, they did it twice. After we, you know, told the property manager that this was the problem, they did it again. So we knew it was intentional. I had recently the president of a board walked into a police station with a pipe bomb and accused my client of putting it on his front lawn.
Huh? A pipe bomb?
A pipe bomb.
Goodness.
And it came out to this big police investigation. My client was worried about being arrested. And what they concluded at the end of the investigation was this gentleman lied. And more than likely he created the pipe bomb. Specifically on the stand, I asked him, why would you pick up a live pipe bomb and carry it to the police station? He said, oh, it wasn't live. And I said, well, how do you know that? And he goes, well, I was a Marine. I had bomb experience. And I'm like, ah. So I had a client that hired me one time, and the next day he called me up to terminate the contract. He changed his mind because his neighbor hired an attorney, and his car was firebombed that night.
I thought I heard them all, Barbara, but it sounds like you've got so many more of them. Houses, eggs, cars, keys.
Oh, yes.
People arrested. People stalked.
They post newsletters about you all over the community saying what a horrible person you are and you engage in criminal activity. I've had one client that they took the logo off the internet of the sheriff's office and made wanted posters of my client, and it looked like official wanted posters, and they're posting all these wanted posters all over the community and giving them out to homeowners.
Oh my goodness. How long have you been practicing? Well, how long have you been representing homeowners?
I've been representing homeowners 2 years now. Ever since I received my license, I was a paralegal for a number of years prior to that.
So you got your license 2 years ago and you've already had all of these cases?
Oh, yes. I do this pretty much 7 days a week. 14 to 16 hours a day. The cases keep me busy. Right now I have 34 open cases, and I'm having to turn down some cases. It is. I mean, right now I've got 3 associations that have decided to get rid of the common properties, the recreation facilities, and take them away from, not allow the homeowners to use them.
What, you mean just stopping them from using them?
Right. I mean, people buy their homes in a community that has a pool, tennis courts, different recreation facilities, and, these associations have been in control of the developer. With the mortgage foreclosure disaster, the developers are not turning over the associations now to a board. They're staying in control of the developer because the developer's not able to sell all the properties. So the developer will then get the bright idea to sell the pool and clubhouse for $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, whatever. And then the homeowners can no longer use it because
it belongs to someone else.
Right, but the law says that no matter how that property is held in title, if it's set up for the benefit of the homeowners, it has to stay that way. But what are your options? You have to turn around and sue. But you have somebody who buys a home that has a pool, tennis courts, all these recreation facilities, and then all of a sudden they don't have them and their property values plummet. And I even have one unscrupulous out-of-town developer who did that on purpose and then bought back all the houses from the people at
Firehouse Sales, right?
Oh, yes.
Whoa.
Yes.
And these things are supposed to be carefree living. They're protecting your property values. It's a wonderful new way of living, isn't it?
Yeah, and if the homeowner tries to use the facilities, they get arrested for trespassing.
Barbara's got enough material here to write a few books, huh?
I sure do. In fact, I actually started to write a book, but then I became so busy I've never had time to get back to it.
I know, it's kind of ridiculous. What's the answer, Barbara? I mean, I think that, if you treat violence with violence, just get a nice big pipe bomb, if you will, and just blow all these condos and HOAs to smithereens and go back to living a normal life.
Yeah, I mean, my answer would be to dissolve every one of them.
I like you, Barbara. I really like you.
My goal is to eventually not have any clients because I've put all the associations out of business.
How can I help you do that?
I wish I had a good answer for that. You know, I mean, the problem is, like I said before, it's a private company run by your neighbors. If there was some way of putting a board in place where the board members could not be members of the community, that might help, but then you're not going to get anybody willing to serve is the issue.
Well, you know what? I think you will find people who want to serve, and they're going to be the wrong people to have over there. I think you're, I mean, this is the type of thing that you're finding the FBI investigating, because there's so much money. There's so much power. It's unfettered power.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and I've come across some associations that, I mean, I would bet my life that the developer is in organized crime.
Well, I think that's one of the issues that the FBI is investigating in Nevada. You know, there's so much that's been going on, and I don't know. I keep waiting for there, you know, to find out what exactly happened. But I think some of the developers were in fact being investigated.
The developers definitely need more regulation. And in Florida, you know, the big problem is that the developers can amend the documents of the association on their whim. There's nothing to say what they can and can't do as long as it doesn't violate some statute or public policy. So the developers can, you know, create these documents and then decide, you know what, I'm going to put in a clause that says no dogs. And they can amend it, where once it's turned over to the members of the association, you need a majority vote to amend the declarations and the governing documents. But as long as the developer has control, he doesn't need anyone's approval to make amendments. And there's case law that says certain things, even if you have the right to unilaterally amend the declarations, there's certain rights that you can't take away from the people and amend the documents. And one of them has traditionally been the right of first refusal or the right to approve tenants. But you will get these developers that will amend their declarations to include these anyway, because they know, what are you going to do? Spend all your money taking them to court? You've got a house worth $200,000-$300,000. Are you going to spend $100,000 to take them to court? And if you lose, you have to reimburse their attorney's fees. So you could be out $250,000-$300,000.
What? There needs to be some kind of, obviously the existing associations aren't going to go anywhere. Much as I would love to have a magic wand and wave it and get rid of them all, because I honestly don't think there's any way we will ever get them to work properly, ever. I think it's a flawed concept. It's shoddy, just a totally shoddy idea. I mean, the only real beneficiaries here are the local municipal governments and the developers. And
well,
the homeowners don't benefit from these things.
No. And, you know, one of my clients had an interesting suggestion, because she's from a northern state, and they've implemented this idea, and they don't seem to have the problems that some of the other states have with associations, but they implemented a mediation committee where there's a committee of members who have nothing to do with the board. They're not related to the board, and they shouldn't be friends of the board, but you know how that goes. can't say for sure who's who. But what they do is they sit down and any disputes they mediate in-house amongst themselves without lawyers before moving on to getting attorneys involved.
You're one of the few attorneys who would even recommend such an idea.
I know, I'll put myself out of business, right?
That's what you want, right?
I can always find another line of the law to go practice, you know.
Well, a lot of the CAI attorneys in California, they're bragging about the fact that they were divorce attorneys. And when the divorce business wasn't going too well, they wrote themselves a recession-proof career. And they went into, they started writing all of the laws for HOAs. And now look at the mess we have. But, you know, these guys are making a ton of money.
Well, and that's the thing, too, because with the economy the way it is, even the law firms are hurting for billable hours.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing more and more when you do have a dispute with an association, the association attorney isn't willing to try and resolve it in a friendly manner. They see an opportunity for billable hours.
They will tell board members, they'll say, you know what, you've got to sue because if you don't, someone could sue you, you're responsible, blah, blah, blah. And, oh, by the way, don't worry about the cost because we'll just collect it from the homeowners.
Right. That, and they also tell them that, you know, you can't be held personally liable because the business judgment rule protects you. You can't be held liable for any mistakes you made. But they forget to tell their clients if they do something willingly, knowingly, wantingly, and maliciously, and they knew or should have known, they're not protected by that business judgment rule.
What I want to go back to legislation. I mean, there's been so much legislation written, and sometimes it favors the homeowner, but it doesn't stay that way for very long because all of a sudden you get the industry coming along and lobbying very hard to get certain provisions changed or overturned.
Right, the homeowners don't have much lobbying capabilities.
I think Florida is probably the only state that I know of where you have a paid lobbyist, where the homeowners have a paid lobbyist.
And right.
And that's because you've got a great organization called the Cyber Citizens for Justice.
Right.
And I think Jan's done an a tremendous job with that.
Really. Oh, he has.
I cannot say enough about what he's done over there. But, you know, I keep trying to get the owners activated. Because I honestly think if the owners would stand up and stop being so afraid and start fighting back, you don't need to own and buy a legislator. You just need to not vote for that legislator. I mean, votes are more important than money. If you have a bad legislator, let your neighbors know, let everyone else know that legislator is not going to look out for your interests. So get involved politically, get involved in trying to get someone good in office. And then just stand up to the boards. I cannot, and go to your local municipal governments because they mandate these things.
Well, and the biggest problem is that people tend to not pay any attention to their association until they have a problem with it.
Right.
And then usually by then it's too late. And the biggest problem is not enough people attend any of the meetings. So many associations, the board members aren't voted in. They just, previous board members appoint their replacements because there's never enough people to make a quorum to hold the election. My own association hasn't had a real election in the 11 plus years I've lived there.
Really?
Yes. It's just the same people keep appointing themselves to run the place. There's nobody watching what they're doing with the money. They will decide to move reserve monies around to operating money and then spend it, or spend the reserves on something other than it's earmarked for. And if nobody questions them and nobody calls them out on it or brings an action against them, they get away with it and they keep doing it. The homeowners, it's even in the Florida statutes that the legislature recognizes that the homeowners are at a disadvantage in litigation against an association. It's written in the statutes over and over.
And so what are they doing about it?
Well, they feel like they've done it. They've acknowledged it, and they set up mediation and arbitration as if that's going to fix it. If you have an association attorney that needs billable hours, he's going to take you to mediation, but he's not going to settle it. He's not going to go there and bargain in good faith. So, you know, I mean, he's getting paid by the hour, and he's getting paid good money. They charge a lot more by the hour than I do.
Yeah.
So, and they'll typically have hundreds to thousands of associations that they represent.
Right.
I mean, my suggestion to the homeowner is get involved with your association before you have a problem. Then if you do have a problem, get together with your neighbors and pool your money to hire an attorney.
I think part of the problem, Barbara, is that people don't know what they're getting into. They don't know about governing documents. They don't know about fraud and embezzlement and that they have a right to look at the books and records. They don't even know that books and records exist. They're looking for a house. They want some place where they can come home after work, some place they can raise their families, some place they can just get away from the world, just shut the door and be left alone. And of course they end up in a blooming association, and they've just bought themselves a whole lot of trouble.
Oh, they have. And here's another thing that needs attention and our legislature should fix. Nobody sees those governing documents prior to purchasing their home. They're stuck in their documents you receive at closing. It's a non-negotiable contract that you don't even get to review in advance. I know if someone would have given it to me prior to closing, I would have read over that and said, not a shot.
In Virginia, you have to provide them ahead of time. And as a buyer, you have 72 hours to read through that stuff and cancel your contract. Back out of the deal without losing your earnest money deposit. Problem is, it's unintelligible.
Well,
and it makes no sense to protect your property values. The purpose of the association is to protect property values. Hey, somebody's going to take care of me. They're going to make sure that my property values remain high.
Well, and here we have the disclosure summary, but it's not clear, you know, that it should be given to a prospective buyer. A lot of times it's just given at closing or not at all. So many associations don't give disclosure summaries because the way the statute's written, it's really up to the seller to give the buyer the disclosure summary.
And here it's a moneymaker, a huge moneymaker for the management companies.
Yeah, and here in Florida, too, we have one whole county where the developer gave out disclosure summaries saying there was no association, no duty to pay assessments, and entice people to buy in a HOA-free community, and then after all the properties were sold, set up an association. The documents had been recorded.
When were the documents recorded? Before the sale?
Before the first lot was sold, the documents were properly drafted and recorded.
So they lied.
They lied. Now, the association wasn't set up, so by contract law theory, you cannot give rights and benefits to a non-existent entity.
Before we went on, before we started recording the show, you talked about defects in docs. Maybe let's look at some of the most basic things that people can do.
You said there were defects in docks. You wanted to make sure that people should, should find out when the governing documents were recorded. Is there any practical stuff you can give us here?
Well, it's absolutely critical to make sure those documents were recorded prior to any of the lots in the community being sold, because those documents need to be in the chain of title of each lot. And there's, some communities, some associations where the developer had recorded the declarations and then transferred the property to another corporation and then to another and then back to themselves, and they would do this every year. And as you're building a community in phases, where when you're reissuing the documents, you're including additional properties, if you don't cross those T's and dot those I's, you're going to make a fatal mistake. And I've got one huge community that's close to 1,500 homes where those mistakes were made, and that association, which is pretty much still in developer control, is forcing the homeowners to pay assessments but won't give them the right to vote.
Jeez. How's that for living in America, huh?
Right. And you need to know how your board members are elected. You need to make sure how many people need to be present to make a quorum to hold any elections. Because the biggest thing is you can never get enough people. So if that number is too high, you're never going to have an election. But you also need to make sure how many people it takes to amend the declarations, because the declarations are the most important document. That's the one that says, if they can regulate what kind of fence you have, the colors you can paint your house, your landscaping, all the things that affect your property directly. And the way in Florida, the way the statute is written, it takes 2/3 of all homeowners to vote for an amendment unless the documents say otherwise. And the intent of that was that some documents have higher numbers than 2/3, or some have just 51%, which is still a majority. Well, some associations have taken that now and made it to where 30% of the homeowners can vote for an amendment. And I'm in particularly anxious to challenge that particular declaration, because all the case law says you can't have less than a majority of homeowners voting on a covenant or a rule that affects everyone.
Is there a statute of limitations in Florida in case the governing documents have been improperly amended? I have someone who calls me from Illinois, and the board notified them that they had amended the docs, about 2002, 2003, giving the board all of these powers. It was never put to a vote. It was and nobody knew that they had to vote on it. They just received notice that, hey, we've amended them, and it was recorded. Any way you can go in and challenge that? What's the statute of limitations? Is there one?
Well, the statute of limitations in Florida is a whole conversation in itself, because it is subject to interpretation. Depending on what the cause of action is, it could start to run from when the harm was discovered, or it could be set in stone. I mean, the classical answer is it depends. And it depends on what kind of cause of action you can bring against the association. So that is just one of those things you have to look at on a case-by-case basis. And one of the big things here in Florida is, you know, they will amend the documents, and they never record the evidence of the documents, how they were amended. They just fill out an affidavit saying we received the proper majority, the proper number of votes, and we amended the documents. But you get some associations that do it correctly. They actually have the signatures of the people that voted to amend the documents, and they record those in the county records.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, and they should be recorded in the county records. I mean, why should anybody take a board president's word that two-thirds of the homeowners voted to amend this document? What two-thirds? I mean, sometimes, you know, the signatures aren't even valid. You know, it's kind of like, I'm from Louisiana where dead people vote. And it's kind of like that. Former owners vote. But actually, I just had one where the signature was of someone who was deceased. And the husband ratified it. I want to know where they get the signature to begin with.
They'd probably just make it up.
That's exactly it.
Well, I live in a really old association, and my governing documents say that it takes 95% affirmative vote to amend the documents. And at the time when these were brand new and they didn't have quite the powers, the industry attorneys who wrote these documents thought this was great. You know, they'd make it so difficult for anyone to change what they want. That was for a period of 20 or 25 years, I can't remember, and then after that it drops down to 75%. Again, affirmative, not a majority of 75% of all eligible people. I think it ought to be 100%. I don't think that I should have the power to change your contract if we're going to keep with this bizarre notion that it's a contract.
Right. I totally agree with that, because even in, you know, some of the communities that are maybe 20 years old here in Florida, going back to the days when pink and teal were the popular colors for houses, you've got these documents. Some of them actually were very specific about the color choices and what you could paint your homes. And then they want to amend them to be more up to date with the earth tones and such, and they're impossible to amend.
It's funny because you can, you know, it dates a neighborhood. I hate calling them communities because they're more like war zones. But you drive through and you know that these are the colors of the time, you know, and it's like walking into a house and seeing an avocado stove or a turquoise refrigerator. You know how old it is.
Right.
They don't make those anymore.
See, I like to call them detention camps.
Oh, I like that. I like that. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I stopped calling them communities. I just have a real hard time using that word to describe them. It's a development, it's a neighborhood, a subdivision, but there ain't nothing community about them.
No. I mean, I just always think of that movie Pleasantville where everything's the same.
It's not, is it? Some of the bizarre things that have come out of Florida are dusty mailboxes, where you could not have more than two people get together, congregate on your front porch.
Oh, yes.
They don't want people. Anything else that's been in the papers? When I started doing this, Barbara, you know, if you saw an article about HOAs, it was like a gem because they didn't come out very often. Now, you can't keep up with them. They're all over the place.
Right, and see, that's another thing, because before, you know, the homeowner could go to the media, and if it was bizarre, the media would report on it, and the HOAs would tend to back off. Now, these stories are so common that the media doesn't even want to pick them up. Well, I mean, it's just the same old song and dance, just different players in a different town.
I get calls from people, "Sue, I've got something for you." I go, "Okay. You've never heard this. You're going to want to put me on, and you're going to want me to tell my story. It's just so bizarre." So I said, "All right, try me out. You know, it's a chestnut. It's happened all the time." And they're surprised. "You mean you've heard this before?" I go, "Oh, yeah. You know, I've heard that before, and a lot worse than that." Anything in particular that's especially interesting that you're working on right now?
Well, I've got a client she put in a Florida-friendly landscaping, beautiful landscaping, and of course, Florida has a statute that says you can't stop someone from having Florida-friendly landscaping. It specifically says a homeowners association cannot legislate Florida-friendly landscaping. The previous statute said that as long as it wasn't in the recorded documents prior to October 1st, 2001, the new statute that went in effect July 1st, 2009, says we don't care what your declarations say. If somebody wants Florida-friendly landscaping, you can't stop them. And it was, from what I understand, it was a pet bill of the governor. Well, I have a client who put in Florida-friendly landscaping, and the property manager was fine with it. There was nothing in writing. She said that she wasn't worried about it happening in writing. Then they changed property managers, and the new property manager, who happens to be a deputy with a gun, who goes around checking for violations, decided she doesn't like this. So they're suing these homeowners over a couple of inches of plant height.
A couple of inches of plant height.
Yeah, because they initially went to mediation and agreed to keep the plants at 12 inches, even though 50 other homes in the community had the same exact plants that are 2 and 3 feet taller. So they did this mediation agreement, and it didn't call for any particular time to have the plants cut back, even though they were pretty much at the 12 inches. Right away after mediation, they went straight to court, filed a petition, and said the plants weren't cut. They were, 12 and a half inches high. They claim in the petition that they were 22 to 24 inches high, but they claimed verbally that they were like 12 and a half inches high. The plants are not that high. I mean, it's ridiculous. You're suing somebody over the height of some leaves.
My mother could never, she lives overseas, and she could never understand why I do what I do. And then one day she heard on BBC, BBC broadcasting overseas, that somebody in Maryland was being sued because they had applied to resurface their driveway, and they had given the dimensions. And when it was actually, the driveway was actually rebuilt, it was 2 inches wider than their permit, than their approved permit by the association, and so the association wanted them to tear it up, and she says, "Now I understand." "Is this normal?" I go, "Oh, yeah, this is very normal."
Yeah, it is. I mean, and some of the things that, they sue over, it's like you have no control over it, like the gentleman on the Gulf Coast with his grass growing. Well, your grass grows at different rates at different times of the year, depending on the amount of rain. They're not taking any of this into consideration.
No.
The lady with the plants that are a couple inches too high, as they claim. I mean, never mind the lady immediately cut the plants back to way below 12 inches. But Mother Nature controls the growth rate of plants.
Yeah.
Are we really going to go out there every 2 weeks with a ruler and measure this lady's plants and wait for them to grow and then sue her over and over? How ridiculous is that?
Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you'll come back with some more of your stories. You do have some bizarre ones.
I sure do.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the work and effort you're doing to spread the word about these abusive associations.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings posed to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home, yet the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.